Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. It is time for a Week 6 review on this Fish and Chips edition of the podcast. So joining me, as he always does for Fish and Chips, is Mr. Brian Fisher. Brian, how was your weekend?
It was a fantastic weekend. Anytime you get to go down to Austin, Texas, a very fun city, we'll just leave it at that, but good food. Great atmosphere down at Darrell K. Royal Stadium for West Virginia, Texas, and really just another big game this weekend. It was kind of, you know, big game weekend. I mean, you had three really top 10 matchups around the country, and a couple upsets, a couple fun games, and another very good week in college football.
Yeah, you were right there on the scene for West Virginia's 48-45 win. Huge for the Mountaineers on so many levels. On a very macro level, obviously, it's their very first Big 12 road game, and then you be able to do that in DKR in front of all of those fans, and then the way they did it too, as far as being able to hang in that game. They were a little chippy. I mean, give us sort of, what did you learn from West Virginia, and what did you learn about Texas coming out of that game, especially being there in person?
Well, I picked West Virginia to win the game because I'd seen Texas the week before and saw that defense really kind of get gashed, both on the ground and kind of get picked apart down the field by Oklahoma State. And that was a backup quarterback known mostly for running the ball in J.W. Walsh. And although they won the game, fantastic game-winning drive by David Ash, I didn't think that offense could score enough to keep pace with West Virginia. You know, and you looked at times, the defense did make plays for Texas. I mean, Alex Okafor, the defensive end, phenomenal game. He's certainly, I think, shooting up on the draft boards. He was pretty much the most dominant player on defense on either team, and he had a great job. But, you know, if West Virginia doesn't turn the ball over, you know, Geno Smith fumbles right into the end zone. Texas gets a touchdown defensively. Texas blocks a punt. They do get some stops on third down, but West Virginia goes 5 for 5. I mean, it was really kind of everything that Texas could do defensively to slow down West Virginia, and they only win by 3. And really, you could consider that last touchdown a give me, but, you know, it's really kind of like a 10-point game. And just very impressed with what West Virginia, they will literally take whatever the defense is giving them. And that's why Bowie, the running back, rushed for over 200 yards. He had a great game. And I think Geno Smith, outside of the turnovers, played pretty well. He made some incredible throws.
Yeah, that was, and we'll get to my game in a little bit. I was actually at Florida State's loss at NC State, that second half collapse. But, you know, as I'm sitting here tracking it on the online, there's a TV in the back of the press box. I go, you know, sneak some looks every now and then. So I didn't actually get to see Bowie's runs, but you see those numbers, and that was the one thing that you knew that Texas was going to try and make them one-dimensional, you know, hope that, you know, they were going to be forced to run the ball. And the fact that West Virginia was able to get out there and do it, I mean, I've watched this team slowly develop under Dana Holgorsen, and as phenomenal as they've been offensively, they have not had anything to speak of as far as a running game. And the fact that they were able to get Bowie going when arguably Alston might be the better running back, I mean, how did he look out? What do you think was a key to being able to get him going?
I mean, he's an elusive guy. There's no question, no doubt about it, that he can get out in open field and make guys miss, and he certainly did with some pretty good Texas defenders. I think for the most part, West Virginia wasn't doing anything special, and Dana Holgorsen afterwards said as much. You know, he said, we kind of just ran right at them. They ran some draws. They ran some traps. You know, they ran some counters. I mean, it wasn't anything super special. The offensive line did a great job opening up the holes, and they really just kind of tried to get a one-on-one matchup with Bowie. Geno Smith had to take off a couple times, and I really think that they tried to keep Texas's defenses honest, and they wanted to, you know, eventually open up that passing game. They didn't really take a shot downfield. You know, this wasn't Baylor where they're throwing it deep every third play. They were, you know, running the ball consistently, getting 4, 5, 6 yards a pop, and then really picking them apart underneath. You know, Texas was playing those two high safeties. They would bring Kenny Vaccaro down, at times, but for the most part, Texas wanted to keep West Virginia in front of them, and they did. But the only problem was when the defensive line couldn't get to Bowie quick enough, he was able to get some big runs. And so very impressed with the play calling by Daniel Holgorsen. That's a big win. Great atmosphere down in Austin, and a big win that I think really gives the Mountaineers a lot of legitimacy, not only to win the Big 12 title, but maybe sneak into that national title picture.
Yeah, exactly. This West Virginia in that win is transformed from a stat freak Heisman front runner and his, you know, very talented teammates to a legitimate contender. And I think they're absolutely deserving that top five spot. I mean, it's, you know, as funny as this sounds, what Geno Smith, what, only 268 yards and four touchdowns? You know, it's because they were able to find other ways to win. Would you, so we believe that West Virginia, I definitely agree with you. They are now sort of in that, you know, that very, very interesting position on at five. They still got to play Kansas State. Kansas State is at six. What are you taking away from Texas? Especially, they've got Oklahoma and the Red River Shootout this weekend. The defense, like you said before, you know, they wanted to keep West Virginia in front of them. Do you still think that they are, you know, one of the best defenses in the Big 12? And how do you see them as a player in that Big 12 title race?
I don't think there's a great defense in the Big 12 by any stretch of the imagination, but I think if you are looking at the 10 teams, they have the most talent on defense for sure. You know, for sure. And then they got a great defensive coordinator, Manny Diaz. His stock has kind of taken a hit the past couple weeks, but I think he does get them in the right position to make plays. And I mean, you saw, you know, Phillips and Vaccaro at times, and some of the secondary members just missed tackles. The linebackers missed a couple tackles. I mean, it was really just kind of a case where, you know, if they had you know, tackled a guy and gotten him for, you know, a 3-yard gain instead of a 25-yard gain, you know, they could have won the game. But I think for the most part, they match up very well with the, you know, the rest of the league. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Texas doesn't lose again in Big 12 play. I think they are set up pretty well to beat just about every other team out there. I think it's going to be a big one against Oklahoma this week. I really was impressed the way, coming off of the bye, coming off of the loss, that Oklahoma really went into Texas Tech in a place that really they've had trouble and against a team that they've had trouble with and really put it to them. It's going to be an interesting matchup. Really, the loser, I think, of that Red River Shootout gets knocked out of the Big 12 title game. I think Oklahoma, still having to play West Virginia, is still in the race. Kansas State obviously also has to play them. I think it's going to be a little bit of a round robin knockout round for the first you know, couple weeks here coming up. You know, it's going to come down to who can make the, you know, big plays. And I think Texas is fine. I think they're still a top 15-ish type team. You know, they run the ball effectively. I think the progress that David Ash has had in the passing game is big. You know, the one thing I noticed against West Virginia, they were targeting their tight ends a lot more. They were leaking guys out. You know, that was pretty impressive. And, you know, I think it's disappointing, obviously, if you're a Texas fan to get this loss, but I think going forward, the team's just fine.
A new AP polls came out today. Lots of shakeup, especially with 3, 4, and 5 all losing, and West Virginia moved up into that 5 spot. I was here in Raleigh, covered the afternoon from my blog cave at my house, and then darted over for the end of the 3:30 games to catch Florida State and NC State in person. I went with the intentions of getting a good look at a team that was possibly going to be competing for a national championship, and I left watching one of the a collapse that unfortunately was a little bit predictable. It was a little bit of a joke, you know, when is Florida State going to get over there and trip over themselves? And you know, NC State down 16-0 at half, come back, they score 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, in the last half of the fourth quarter, 17 unanswered in the second half. Florida State can't do anything offensively, only 120 yards of offense in that second half. I think they only completed like 5 of 13 third downs, and I give the credit in this game to sort of two people or bodies of people. I mean, Mike Glennon, an absolute stud. He, the offensive coordinator, Dana Bible, and defensive coordinators Mike Archer and John Tenuta, they went in at halftime and they changed their scheme. They started coming out and they were throwing these short crossing routes instead of getting vertical, because Florida State was, they knew that Glennon could beat them deep down the field, but they were leaving underneath wide open. So they just started chipping away with these, 5, 7, 10 yard pass plays. And then defensively, Florida State's offensive line looked overwhelmed. They sacked DJ Manuel 5 times while a hurt offensive line kept Glennon up. He only got sacked once in the whole game. It was NC State playing above their heads and Florida State tripping over themselves, Brian. It was disappointing if you were hoping that the Seminoles were back.
Yeah, well, I guess Florida State was back to doing Florida State things,
exactly.
I've been AMO for the last couple of years, and certainly it's not what everybody was thinking going into that game. I mean, NC State down 3 offensive linemen, that was probably my most concerning thing if you're looking at it. Prior to the game was how was NC State going to protect Mike Glennon? I thought, having seen him in person out here in Southern California at the Elite 11 and seeing his arm, I knew he could make big plays. And, I think they got off to a rocky start, early in the season against Tennessee. It's still a very solid football team and a heck of a win for that staff. I think they are a very solid staff, probably, one of the more underrated staffs, I think, in the country, and did a great job against Florida State. And, the ACC, what can you say? I mean, it's a league that doesn't have an elite team, and, everybody's talking about the Big Ten being down, but, they at least have Ohio State with a chance to run the tables undefeated. And, for the ACC, it's really looking like a one big league playing the Big East champion in the Orange Bowl once again.
Yeah, the biggest piece, the thing that disappointed me the most was Jimbo Fisher and some of the lack of execution that there was down the stretch. I mean, there was I think in the fourth quarter, Florida State had the ball. They had come up with a stop, and all they really needed to do was get 2 first downs in order to, make NC State burn all their timeouts and slowly eat their way down the field. And Chris Thompson got stopped short. Chris Thompson stopped in the backfield. And on third down, they went right back and forced NC State to burn their final timeout, but left more than a minute for Mike Glennon. And as we saw, that was all he needed to get down there. And on fourth and goal at the 2-yard line, I mean, the fact that NC State, the other thing Florida State did was they burned all of their timeouts. So the no timeout situation, neither team had a timeout in this game. I don't know if every listeners were watching, but neither team had a timeout for the last minute and a half. And it actually benefited NC State because Florida State's defenders were gassed. They were having trouble making substitutions, and they gave up that long touchdown drive that ended up costing them the game. I mean, I don't want to speak out of place. I'm not a coach. It certainly had the signs of a poorly coached game on the Florida State sideline.
Yeah, I mean, you got to point the finger a little bit at the staff. And I mean, the Seminoles are the most talented team in the ACC. I mean, there's no doubt about that. They got a good quarterback. The offensive line, everybody had question marks, and that came up in this game. And but the bottom line is they just didn't come up and compete. I mean, it was a game they should have won. They probably should have won it easily, I think, if you looked at things on paper coming into this. But that's why we play the college football games. And I mean, just a heck of a win for NC State. And I mean, it was going to be difficult, I think, if you looked at Florida State's schedule and said, all right, can they get to the national title? Well, it's going to be really difficult unless Florida was undefeated at the end of the year and they were able to beat them. Just the depth and the perception of the ACC was going to bring them down. And when you're talking about playing, having an Oregon undefeated out there, and possibly another SEC team, I mean, it was going to be a difficult task and an uphill climb, but it's one that Seminoles fans, unfortunately, don't have to worry about anymore.
Yeah, let me stand up for my ACC here. I do think that what you have in some of the programs, especially right now, is you just have a lot of things changing. If you look at most of the coaches, I think everybody but Beamer and Grobe is sort of in year 4 and 5, and it's an awkward time with turnover and with some of the programs, but you know, you look at Beamer with Virginia Tech really struggling,
Both Virginias. I mean, you know, you look at what Mike London was able to do with Virginia last year, take them to the Chick-fil-A Bowl, and then they've taken a huge step back. I mean, really the entire state of Virginia is struggling right now, and that really hurts, I think, more than anything in going off on your point.
Yeah. Okay, now you mentioned Florida. So before we talk any more about how the ACC needs to get their act together, let's move it on over to the SEC for Florida, who just huge game for them. I mean, this is becoming a great year for Will Muschamp, because it seems after every win, I see more people talk about how this was the signature win. No, this was the signature win. And now they are the number four team in the nation and as much a part of the SEC title hunt as Alabama. I mean, realistically, they have as strong a chance as the Tide do right now. What are you getting? First of all, let's start with LSU. How far has LSU dropped off?
You know, I really don't think they've dropped off as much.
You don't?
Obviously they lost, and it was a close game, and you just really don't see that coming out of a Les Miles coach team. But I mean, they do have issues along the offensive line. I mean, you saw guys just dropping like flies, I think, early in that game, and that threw off the rhythm of the offense. Zach Mettenberger's got to be better than that. I was just surprised. They've got players at wide receiver, but they haven't been able to really make plays in the passing game. And I mean, they have a, you know, kind of really a 3-4 headed monster at running back, but just did not really run the ball effectively. And I think the defense is still solid. I think they're still a top 10 team or right around there, but they've got to figure things out. They got to be more creative. I think that was the one thing that I noticed when I was watching the game is they really weren't that creative. I mean, they weren't doing a lot of misdirection. They were really kind of going, you know, good on good. And against a team like Florida, the way they're built, especially on defense, I mean, that's going to be tough to do with anybody in the league. And I think it's going to be interesting. I think coming home, playing South Carolina, you know, playing Alabama, I'm really interested to see how LSU can respond, because if you look at them, you know, the talent – outside of maybe cornerback with Mills, who's replacing Tyrann Mathieu, I mean, these are a lot of guys that are going to end up in the NFL next year. So I think it's still a very talented team that should be able to win, controlling the clock, playing defense. But, you know, they've got to get some sort of answer in the passing game, and didn't have it against Florida.
Yeah, I just don't know if they can get first downs. You know, against inferior competition, they've been able to absolutely wear people down. And I love that four-headed attack that they've got. And I think Blue is fantastic. I think that, I mean, every one of those guys is a very, very strong running back. But, you know, you ever get just sort of the gut feeling and you just sort of say, LSU doesn't seem like a title team to me. Does that make sense?
Well, you know, I've thought about this in kind of as this game was getting down to the end there. And I mean, we talked a lot about losing the Honey Badger and saying, well, you know, they'll be okay. I mean, he was kind of a liability in coverage, and they've got some other guys that can return punts. But what they lost with him was the spark. And that's what I noticed almost immediately in this game against Florida. They had no spark. I mean, there was no turnaround play. There was no, you know, interception return for a touchdown. There's no, you know, blocked punt, you know, that was run back or anything like that. I mean, this was, you know, really, they were waiting for a big play and it never came. And that's what this team kind of lacks. And, you know, if they can somehow find that on the roster with someone doing things against a South Carolina, you know, against some of the other teams on the schedule, they can win those games. I think it's that simple. They just did not look fired up and ready to go. And, I mean, I was really surprised at how they were not. And, you know, they kind of looked shocked. It's third down and they didn't get it. All right, well, we'll kind of go back off to the sidelines. I mean, there was no sense of urgency. You know, it was really just a kind of a surreal look at Les Miles' team on Saturday.
Yeah, all right. I'm glad you're just able to give some better explanation to what I just described as gut feeling. But that's it. I mean, they just didn't look like these – these Les Miles teams, and maybe it's because from their Louisiana, and I think about Mojo and Voodoo and everything else like that. But you know, these teams, they've been able to find ways to win, and they play with this swagger and this tenaciousness, and it just hasn't been there. Like you said, there was just it was very, very weird looking at them. Anyway, moving over to the other top 10 game of the weekend, South Carolina absolutely just working Georgia. And if it wasn't for that one garbage time touchdown, what was it? Would have been the Georgia's first shutout. Is it in conference play since like Alabama in 95 or something like that?
Yeah, it was back in the 90s. I forget the date. I do remember seeing that stat. But, I mean, they just from the get-go. I mean, I was sitting down in the press box and flipped it on, you know, just to see the start. And everybody was talking about it. And boom, you know, South Carolina scores. And then they score again. And they get punt return. And, I mean, it was just, you know, the game was over, you know, in the first half. And you kind of said, all right, well, it's only 21-0. Maybe Georgia can get a quick score at the end, or maybe even score early in the third. They're right back in it. But no, I mean, this was a total domination by South Carolina, and it did play out kind of how you expected it. If you're a Gamecocks fan, punishing defensive line that were really able to take advantage of what Georgia was doing, shut down the ground game. That put a lot of pressure on Aaron Murray, he's a guy that going into hostile environments. In the past, he just hasn't, been able to get wins in big games like that. And, terrific game plan by Steve Spurrier. The offense was clicking. Marcus Lattimore was running well. Connor Shaw has really been his progress, kind of like David Ash and Jeff Driscoll for Texas and Florida. His progress as a quarterback is really is propelling this team into the national title conversation, because he opens a lot of things up. He keeps defenses honest. He can run the ball. He's a hard-nosed runner. If he's got the moxie factor, he can make plays, no matter what it is. And, it's a different look in South Carolina team, and rightfully so that they're in the top three or four.
They got, like you said, at number 9 LSU, at number 4 Florida. Then they're home against Tennessee, Arkansas, and then they get Wofford before going to Death Valley to play Clemson. Where are you setting the over-under on South Carolina's wins at the end of the season?
I mean, there's a chance that they wind up undefeated in Atlanta. I mean, they really have that shot, I think. And you look at the schedule. I mean, they're going to be tested, immediately. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, this is a big trip coming up, and you got to wonder. All right, you're fired up. You're at home. You scored the 21 points right away, and then you have a pretty good second half, and you beat a top ranked team like number 5 Georgia. What's the next week like? And I think that's the one thing that we've seen this team is sometimes be inconsistent. I mean, the week before, I mean, maybe Steve Spurrier was just pulling the rope-a-dope against Kentucky for Georgia. But, I mean, they looked bad in that first half against Kentucky, poured it on at the end and came back and won that one fairly convincingly. But, I think it's going to be two tough trips. I think the trip to LSU really will show us if they can handle a physical brand of football. That's going to prepare them for the game against Florida. They're probably not going to be favored in either one of those games, but they can win both of them. I think there's no doubt about it. They could run the table the rest of the way. And after those two big games, I mean, the schedule just really opens up. I mean, Tennessee, Arkansas, Wofford, and really a reeling Clemson team that's not very good defensively. I think it really does set up for a nice run to Atlanta if they can get these next two.
And then, and think about just now, you've got South Carolina has to go straight from LSU to the Swamp to play the Gators. The Gators are, got this big matchup against LSU. Well, they turn around for the outdoor cocktail party against Georgia the next week. I mean, this might be one of those three-way ties at the top where everybody's got one conference loss.
Yeah, I really think that's speaking a little bit to the depth of the SEC East. I mean, when everybody was talking about the SEC West being great and all this, but, it's really the East that's proven to be the better division. And, Bruce Feldman kind of alluded to it in his big picture article on Sunday. I think you look at the SEC East with those three teams and up at the top, and it's hard not to say that they're the best division in football. I mean, you know, you toss in a Tennessee team that I think might be a little better than the record, even though they're not great. You know, Kentucky showed a little bit of improvement, but injuries have just decimated them. I think Missouri's certainly better than their record, even though they've struggled, especially with James Franklin out. And I think that the top of the division is as tough as they come in college football. And it's not to denigrate the West, but I think the East is certainly proven stronger. South Carolina and Florida coming along a lot quicker than a lot of people expected, I think, is a big reason why.
Kansas State took care of business against Kansas. Notre Dame absolutely worked Miami on the ground. Got 200-yard rushing days from Atkinson and Sierra Wood. You got Ohio State in a 63-38 shootout against Nebraska. And Oregon State, 19-6, moving up to number 10 in the polls. And then TCU, without Casey Pahal, falling to Iowa State. An upset some may have predicted before the arrest, but afterwards, certainly no surprise. Well, in general, just sort of looking at the landscape, anything that we haven't touched on, what jumps out to you as far as somebody that really made a big statement on Saturday?
Well, I mean, I was shocked at the number of points that Ohio State was able to put up. I mean, that was very surprising to me, and I thought they kind of had a couple weeks where they're kind of so-so. They'd make some plays here and there, and they'd win games. But, I mean, this was really a huge announcement that, hey, Ohio State is for real. They definitely have a chance to run the table. I mean, you look at the schedule, you know, the game at Michigan at the end and the game at Wisconsin are really the two big tests left on the schedule. And they get a week, you know, a bye right before they go to Camp Randall. So very intriguing to see how they do. And then, you know, Penn State, I give credit to Bill O'Brien, that staff. They've done a phenomenal job turning things around. That was a big win over a Northwestern team that was very hot. They had a chance to start the season 7-0 when you looked at their schedule. But Penn State came in, you know, great fourth quarter. I mean, you know, phenomenal way of fighting back. Matt McGloin really has turned things around and been pretty good for them. I mean, he's, you know, when you look at all the Big Ten stats, you know, you're like, wow, really? Matt McGloin like this? And you know, credit that to Bill O'Brien and his guys, because they've really let that team, you know, turn it around and fight hard. And, you know, it's been pretty good to watch, I think, if you're a Penn State fan. And the other one, I think you got to look at Auburn. You know, falling to 1-4 this year, losing to a bad Arkansas team, and they didn't just lose. I mean, they got, you know, it was only 24-7, but they really kind of got blown out. I mean, the offense couldn't do anything. Kyle Frazier and Mosley were getting sacked, and you know, they give up 14 points in the fourth quarter. You know, when he thought it was going to be close. And you know, very interested to see how their season shapes out, because it could get toasty up there on the plains for Gene Chizik. And, you know, a lot of people are already saying, well, is his job secure? Is it, you know, is he going to get fired? Yeah. I think that talk's already starting at the beginning of October, with Alabama still on the schedule with a bunch of other tough games. You know, it could intensify pretty quickly for him.
You mentioned Matt McGloin. Matt McGloin was a member of the Fish and Chips Week 5 honor roll. So, like we did last week, let's start filling it out again. I'll go ahead and lead off my two nominations for the honor roll. One, a guy, he needed a bounce back week, and he certainly came through. And it's Stanford quarterback Josh Nunez. Mm-hmm. He goes 21-34, 360 yards, two touchdowns. Most importantly, no interceptions. They needed every single bit of it in a 54-48 overtime win over Arizona. Big game for Stanford. Don't you? I mean, that is really the only option. Stanford had to win that game, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was such a fun game to watch. I mean, you didn't expect, I think, Stanford's defense to give up that amount of points. I knew they would have some success, I think, with that front seven to get pressure on Matt Scott. But, I mean, credit Josh Nunes. I mean, he did a phenomenal job. Him progressing in the passing game is really huge, because that does open things up with a pretty good offensive line, I think, you know, with Stephen Taylor to turn around and hand off to. And that's a big win for that program. They got another one coming up this week against Notre Dame. Could be interesting to see how they finish the season up.
And my second nomination before tossing it off to you is, like I said earlier, you know, and Tom O'Brien and the NC State coaching staff. They made adjustments that the Florida State staff didn't. And, you know, they gave NC State, you beat the number three team on a fourth and goal touchdown with 16 seconds left to play. That's going to go down as one of the more memorable home victories of the Tom O'Brien era. So, you know, credit that staff for all they were able to do. And those are my nominations for the honor roll. What do you have, Brian?
Pretty good. I'm going to go with West Virginia's Andrew Bowie, 270 yards, two touchdowns, and really a huge part of that win against Texas for West Virginia. The last drive, all but one of the plays was him running the ball. They really took it to Texas right when they needed a big score to answer and extend the lead, and just a phenomenal job of salting it away. Made some big plays, was a tough runner between the tackles, did just about everything you want in a guy like that. And, I mean, that's a huge effort for West Virginia. And he was the reason why. I think when you looked at Geno Smith, he was phenomenal throwing the ball, but he did have those two turnovers. And, you know, you look at what Bowie was able to do, and he really did carry them at times. And that's pretty impressive, considering all the weapons on that offense. And then I'm going to go a little outside. I guess I'm going to your neck of the woods, but a little outside the normal sphere here. But Connor Vernon, two touchdown passes for Duke as they blow out Virginia, and he set the ACC career receptions record now, which is passing Clemson's Aaron Kelly. So big shout out, big win for Duke, which is 5-1 on October 7th. They are one win away from bowl eligibility, which is huge. David Cutcliffe, I know he had said coming into the season this was his best Duke team that he felt he had, and so far it's proven true.
You know that the reception that broke the record was for negative 2 yards, right?
I did not know that.
it was a wide receiver.
That was not in the highlight I saw, but they just said that he was, you know. Okay, well, that's good to know.
Well, he did have that one, the 50-yard touchdown pass. That was awesome. Yeah,
I saw that one. And, I mean, I am just shocked at the way that Virginia has taken a step back and the way that Duke has fought. You know, they played the game against Wake last week, and then they come back and they have this big game against Virginia. I mean, that program's really rolling, and been very impressed with what they've been able to do, really on both sides of the ball. I think the defense is playing a little bit better than people would expect from, you know, the Blue Devils. But
yeah, I learned that from Bruce's big picture today, that the Duke has the second ranked red zone defense in America, number two behind BYU, ahead of Alabama.
Well, and you talk about red zone defense, the one team that might not stat-wise be up there, but I think Oregon also, when teams get in the red zone against them, that defense does a great job of tightening up. They had another pick six, you know, in the game against Washington. I think a lot of people are undervaluing that team's defense, and one of the reasons why I think it's going to be interesting down at the end of the year, as we get into November when they got to play USC and Oregon State. I think the defense could be a big factor for them, as it is with a lot of these top teams.
It is fun. And week six, if anything else, showed us that we know absolutely nothing. I mean, that's like you said at the beginning, it's why we play the game. So we're looking forward to week seven. Be sure to keep it here at CBSSports.com and tuned into the podcast. We'll have another full week for you. Brian, thanks once again for spending some of your Sunday to record this.
Absolutely. I love coming on, and looking forward to a big week seven. I can't really wait because I just want to get right to, you know, at least we have, I think we have Tuesday night football coming back. So there's a little bit of some satisfaction this week, but should be another good week. A lot of big matchups, and I can't wait.
That's right. We can't wait. Hope, make sure you stick it with, keep it here with us. And we appreciate you tuning in. For Brian Fisher, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much.